Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're talking today about protecting yourself against holiday scams with our guest who's been with us, I don't even know how many years, a long time in one capacity or another. From the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection is the administrator of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. That's, of course, within our Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, Michelle Reinen. Michelle, hi.
Well, hello, Larry. Good to see you again.
Good to see you, too. And as we talk with Michelle, I hope you'll join in. Usually you're pretty good about calling or sending emails. Tell us what you want to know about avoiding holiday scams, or maybe something's happened to you that you want to report on. Give us a call. The number's 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234, or email to ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Well, Michelle, nothing takes the ho-ho-ho out of the holidays like getting scammed. How can we make sure we're not getting ripped off when we're shopping?
Well, yeah, there's a number of different things happening this time of year, and it could be just really great sales, right? And
yeah,
we need to watch those and make sure that they're legitimate. And what I mean by that is that we're not being taken advantage of by fake websites or fake social media posts that are really promoting deep, deep discounts on the hottest items or maybe some clothing or jewelry. And they're really just scammers out there posing fake websites trying to get your attention. So really know where you are shopping is the first thing. Don't believe everything you read. And then check out the retailer, if you will. So if you're online, make sure that you're at a .com. When it comes to making payment, you're moved to a secure portion of the website, the HTTPS. See who this company is. Check them out. Look at the About Us portion of their website, assuming they have one, and see where they say they are located, and then do a Google search about that. If they have large quantities of the item that no one can get anymore, that's problematic, and it's a red flag for you to really move away from that. And then to protect yourself, if you do engage in something that your gut's telling you, maybe not. I've popped onto those sites like, oh, I don't know about this. Make sure you're using your credit card, because it is a protection that if product doesn't get delivered, you can file a dispute. If product doesn't appear and be sent to you as represented, you could have some recourse that way as well if you're using your credit card. If you're moving offline to pay with a different platform, like peer-to-peer payment, you're probably out your money. If you're using like a PayPal or some other app form of payment, again, there probably aren't those protections for you in getting that payment back. So it's a self-protection. It's a layer of insurance for you in the way that you make those payments. Other things that you can do to make sure you're going to be protected is we talked about it in October when I was here. Make sure that computer's up to date.
you gotta
start at the basics here, and before you do that shopping, make sure your operating system's up to date. But going past that, you're gonna want to take a look at links. You know, if you get a promotion and you click a link, be confident where it's taking you. Those social media posts, again, know where they are being directed and be sure that they're not just promotions that way. Always confirm your cart content before you make purchases to be sure the amount that something was posted for is what it's coming up as in your cart before you pay. Reading the fine print about details about the sale and promotion. Maybe you need to buy five of an item and it's not coming up because you only have four. So paying attention to those things. Those aren't scams. Those are just fine print details of a promotion that you may not pay attention to, and you think they're the best seller of that item when maybe the competitor has a better price.
Lots of things to consider there. You know, if I get all kinds of emails about things that are going to be delivered or I need to go online. I mean, if I'd ordered all those, I'd be broke. Supposedly, I need to, you know, quickly go online to them to, you know, that's baloney.
It's absolutely,
is the polite way to put it, I guess.
Yeah, you are certainly talking about those shipping and delivery notification scams that are out there. And we see a big spike on this scam during the holiday season. It happens throughout the year. We also hear from consumers that don't shop online at all and get these emails as well. So they are broadcast emails from scammers, and they are trying to get you to engage with their phishing scheme. And that is a fake shipping company notification sent from the scammer alerting you that a package delivery is being threatened. It's going to be delayed unless you verify some private information or log in to their website. And they're going to represent that they are the shipping company and send you to a fake website to log in. And now they have your login information. They're looking for passwords, other personal identifiable information like name and address, financial accounts. Sometimes there's an attachment they ask you to click on, which could download viruses and malware onto your computers. But these fake emails look incredibly legitimate because they use company logos that are well known. If you look real close, their coloring could be a little faded or the image could be a little fuzzy on the edges because it's a copy. The grammar could be off, so spelling, punctuation, and just grammar errors. But again, they're trying to represent the legitimate, large, well-known companies, some retailing companies, and the Postal Service. They want you to engage whether you've purchased online or maybe you're expecting gifts from family that are being sent to you, so you don't even have to have sent something. And they're, again, going to threaten you with this delay of delivery unless you take action. So our best advice here is if you are waiting on a package from a company and you think this might be real, go back to your confirmation email that you received when you made the purchase, and then they'll send you shipping information when they mail your package. Track it that way. Use that confirmation email tracking number. Log in or go to directly using your, you know, fingers to type it out, URL to the shipping company's website. Don't use links in the fake email that you're getting or the imposter email that you're getting, because we don't want anything to happen to your computer or for you to hand over any information.
Michelle Ryan and our guest Nick in Green Bay has something to share with us. Nick, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My daughter, she kind of screwed up. She bought a phone off of Facebook Marketplace, and she used Apple Pay, and she sent the lady $200, but the lady never sent the phone. And I told her we should use PayPal because it protects you, but what's our recourse on this lady that isn't sending the cell phone?
So a couple of different things here. If you've inquired with Apple Pay to see if there's any recourse in filing a dispute and if they can cancel any payment, I'm doubtful with that because it doesn't sound like it's the Apple credit card, but the credit card may provide some protections to you like a bank credit card would.
Yeah.
And there you can file the dispute when the charge appears on your billing statement. And you need to do that within 60 days and they can reverse that transaction. The other thing is to file a complaint with Consumer Protection so we can engage with the individual. And depending upon if it's truly an individual, if they're representing as a business, we may have action there. And then reporting it to Facebook Marketplace, because if there's a vendor out there that is promoting goods and not delivery, they may be able to take action or block against that individual slash vendor. There should be a place on their marketplace for you to report that suspicious activity about that vendor. So a number of different options. And what I'll say about PayPal is it may or may not provide protections like a credit card, depending upon how you're using PayPal. If you're using it as a method to insert your credit card, it could. But if you're using PayPal with funds that are on your account, that also may not be protected, or just to the limitations of what PayPal discloses to consumers as part of their user agreement.
There you go, Nick. And by the way, let's give the number and the email to, or the website to go to, Michelle, for Nick or anybody else.
Yeah, absolutely. You can call us to have a complaint mailed out to you at 1-800-422-7128. That's the Consumer Protection Hotline. Or go directly to the website and file online at datcp.wi.gov.
All right. Joe in Ontario, Wisconsin has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Joe.
Hi. So we have a log cabin rental business, and occasionally I will get emails that include credit card information, and they'll ask for a full payment receipt, and you can kind of tell it's a scam because of the grammar in some of the emails. And we've always been curious as to how exactly that scam works, or how do they get money from us? Because if I were to charge that credit card and send them a payment receipt and they don't show up, what is that scam all about? How does that work?
Yeah, I haven't really heard of that one specifically, other than to see if it's a test method, to see if they've maybe skimmed a credit card and are trying to just test to see if it will process and go through, and then you're able to provide that receipt with that hold because you've done a verification. That seems like a more complicated way. You know, normally we see small dollar charges at convenience stores to verify cards, but that could be one way to see if it's working and that they have proper information to create more havoc, if you will, with that card. Or it might be a way to see if you're willing to engage with them and if there's any way they can get any transaction information out of you off of that receipt. But I haven't heard of that specifically yet. We've seen reverse type information scams for small businesses where they try and get you to hand over a cell phone and a PIN number so then they can start charging to your business and access accounts. But this doesn't seem to tie that way. So we'll have to look at that a little more.
Yeah, take a look at that. Joe, thanks for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in too. Number to call 800-642-1234. Or email us to ideas@wpr.org. Jill Nadeau's our producer today. Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller with Michelle Reinen for the Ideas Network. Taking a look at consumer issues, consumer protection issues, keeping safe and scam-free this holiday season with our guest, Michelle Reinen. She's the administrator of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. So it's great to have her with us once again, and certainly you can join in with your own questions or your own emails. Love to hear from you. Sometimes my next-door neighbor family, they have a young child, and so it's my first opportunity in a long time to buy a gift, a toy, for a young child, but sometimes something we sometimes forget about is to make sure the toys that we give are safe. And what advice do you have on that?
Yeah, Larry, isn't this the most fun at the holidays, is picking the right toy for a child? And you're trying to find something that will expand their learning world, really, and entertain them. But you do need to consider safety as part of all that. And what we're looking for here in asking consumers to evaluate and giving toys to children is look at those warning labels. And we're talking about things like age grading. This isn't about the mental advancement of a child. This is about the physical development of a child when we're looking at toy safety. So that age grading is all based on how a child develops physically, and if a small ball in a toy can present a choking hazard to a 6-month-old throat size. And so, yes, it can. And so that's going to have a warning label about choking hazards and have an age grading probably for 3+ on it. If it contains that small part. And people can test this at home, choking hazards. They can grab a toilet paper tube, and if the part falls through it, that's going to be a choking hazard. That tube is a little larger than what's called a choke tester. And so if it seals off the tube, that's a suffocation hazard because it could actually seal off as well as opposed to being a choking hazard. But other things you can look for are sharp edges, pinch points, and those are going to have ASTM letters on it. That those are testing certifications for toys that are out there. Those all go through that rigorous testing for small parts, choking, sharp edges. You will even see magnets and batteries, and chemical testing can be done on toys, like toxins for crayons and markers and sidewalk chalk. So you're looking for ASTM labels. And if you are looking at any toys that could have electrical circuits with them, maybe some science or baking or that kind of thing, UL, underwriter laboratory testing standards are things you want to seek out and make sure they've gone through all that. Other things to consider is if you're buying a toy for an older child, are there younger children in the household? And does that older toy contain those small parts and magnets and things that could present hazards to the younger child? And just making sure maybe that's part of the gift giving, or that they maybe have their own space to play in where the younger child won't have access to that toy. And, you know, don't make the gift complete is the other thing. If you're given a bike, don't forget the helmet, a scooter, a helmet, maybe elbow, knee pads, wrist pads, in new skis, helmet, goggles. You know, consider the safety gear that could accompany a different toy, or, you know, athletic gear as well. So can make that package complete.
Is there a place, every once in a while you'll hear a report, they're recalling this place or this toy or that one. Is there a place you can go and just check?
Yeah, absolutely. And we really hope consumers check before they wrap the package, you know, just because recalls can happen right before the holidays when, you know, people celebrate at different timetables. CPSC.gov. It's the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission's website, CPSC.gov. You can check for recalls. They do it by product type or by manufacturer. And so it's really easy to check for the latest recalls. And you can actually sign up to have them emailed directly to you if you have children or young ones at home or in your world. Plus, don't forget lawnmowers and power tools and everything else gets recalled too. So it's not just children that we need to watch for with safety. It's certainly adults too. You get those cordless drill. Well, that battery pack can become a recall problem and become a fire hazard. So be checking those toys as well.
Somebody posted this great information. I have some young nephews and nieces I'm shopping for this year.
Oh, excellent.
Me. Mike in Shorewood, we go to you. Hi, Mike.
Wow, thank you for taking my call. This is a little bit more about the fraud. I thought I would share two quick examples for people to watch out for. I recently had my driver's license uploaded at a truck rental place for moving. And about a month later, somebody walked into our credit union with their picture on all of my information on an ID and was able to cash out two $10,000 checks, which really cleaned us out. Fortunately, we were able to get that back. So uploading, you know, your driver's license seems like a real risk these days. And the other example was a friend of mine that's even worse, which is he basically was seduced online by a woman who was peddling cryptocurrency and convinced him to basically evacuate his life savings. And he was scammed and he eventually lost it all. And it was kind of this romance with fraud. And, you know, he's just devastated. But those two examples came to mind when I heard your show, and I thought other consumers might want to hear that.
Yeah, Mike, thanks. Great examples, I think, Michelle.
They really are. The first one with the truck rental and the driver's license, depending upon if he went there and they uploaded it or if he got all his information as part of the reservation and did it online, it's making sure your computer's secure and transmitting that data, reading and understanding privacy policies, and asking about their security and how long they hold the information when they're taking that in, too. You know, once that rental's over, what do they do with that? Do they keep it in a database or do they purge that? Those are good questions you can ask. And you have to decide, you know, if there aren't other options for the rental, how you're going to proceed. But maybe there's a way when you're done to ask them to purge the information, and just that awareness and making sure Department of Transportation knows about that. The other thing that, yeah, that is a new twist on romance scams. Romance scams, we've always talked about how they develop that love interest and that emotional bond, and then they ask for money as a way to meet, or because they're having an emergency or a business problem or need to travel. But the new twist is to develop the relationship further by investing together in cryptocurrency. And really, it's the scammer who's developed the cryptocurrency, and the investment is with the scammer in their cryptocurrency, and it's not any additional bond that you're forming with that individual. They are just found a new way to get your money. And that's so hard. I mean, he mentioned his friend being just devastated, because not only financially could they be devastated, emotionally as well. So that's a tough one to get through.
And Mike was lucky to get his $10,000 that money back from the bank. I can remember someone calling us a few years back, but the person had all of the money taken out of her account, and even there was like a $3,000. You could borrow up to $3,000.
Right.
They borrowed up to $3,000. Not only took all her money, but they borrowed the $3,000. So she only lost everything, but she had another $3,000 to cover, and the bank couldn't cover it.
Right. So you're right. That is absolutely fabulous that the bank could do that. And the banks are really, I think, increasing their fraud departments and trying to make those efforts. So, you know, if you go to the bank to do a large transaction and the teller questions you, or don't take offense. They're really there to help protect you and help identify scams or situations that may present a pattern of a scammer too. So don't take offense to that.
Tim in Camp Douglas, we go to you. Tim, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I got a basic question here. With all this catfishing and scamming and phone stuff going on, why is it so hard to catch these people? And if they do get caught, what kind of penalties are they looking at? And I'll take your comment offline.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's hard to catch them because they're using technology to stay hidden. Often they are international, and so they're not within particular jurisdictions, and they are using money mules and others that are able to be identified with federal law enforcement partners that are helping to facilitate the scams. And yes, some of these individuals are caught and prosecuted. And again, it takes a multi-layer approach. The states coming together with the federal government and different agencies and even international partners. I go back to, this is an older example, I know there are fresher ones, but the 2017 call rings that were broken up overseas that were presenting the IRS scam that was just calling everybody daily. And there were about 7 call centers that were broken up using that multi-layer approach to break up those call rings and prosecute those individuals. But there are certainly in the U.S. courts and a number of individuals who are brought forth for these violations.
I was thinking about another consumer victory that relates to you folks that isn't exactly the same, but it's certainly a consumer victory, and that's the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection settlement with Dollar General.
Yeah, this is a weights and measures case. We talk about that from time to time when we talk about gas pumps and scanning and packages to making sure that they weigh properly. But this is a situation where we found with Dollar General 662 violations of price accuracy laws, and then they also had an additional 53 violations of refund policy disclosures. And they're going to be paying $850,000+ in civil forfeitures, surcharges, and fees. An inspection was done at 238 Dollar General stores in Wisconsin between January 30th and February 10th of this year, and that involved our state weights and measures inspectors and some municipal inspectors from various locations, and they looked at over 7,000 products to see how they were scanning at the checkout counters, and they found that those 662 items priced higher than what was advertised, either on the shelf price, and that resulted in a 17% higher cost than the stated price, you know, if consumers had paid for those goods, which some had. And so we also noticed that they didn't have the proper signage in 53 stores. And that signage is to inform consumers that you're entitled to the difference if you identify you've been overcharged for something. So you should get that difference back for what you were charged versus what the shelf price was. And they didn't have those that signage in place. So Dollar General doesn't admit any wrongdoing here. They've already invested $70,000 in making corrections and have indicated as part of their corrective action that they'll invest another $300,000 annually and do price checks every 45 days in their stores to verify things are scanning properly. And we'll continue to monitor as well.
Yeah. And you put PayPal billing errors in your scam spotlight. I know what was going on with, and you mentioned PayPal earlier, but what was going on there?
Yeah, we've heard from consumers. This is based on consumer reports to our consumer protection hotline that they're receiving a message claiming they need to pay a bill or finalize a refund through PayPal. In many of the cases, the consumers did not even have PayPal accounts. So we've talked many times how PayPal is impersonated for phishing schemes. They always want people to go in and verify as part of those phishing schemes, but this is a billing scheme. They said that in order to correct the alleged billing error, the message asked the consumer to provide their credit card information using a link or phone number in the email. And of course, those links can lead to convincing clones of the real PayPal website. They're going to try and make it look like it's legitimate. And then they are seeking that login information. And we all know that when you click a link, that you could get a virus or malware loaded onto your computer. So there's concerns about that. Consumers had recognized this as a scam because, again, they didn't even have these accounts. And so there's just that concern about stealing data or even taking control over the device if they're getting that information and clicking. So I'm real happy to hear that the consumers recognize this and reported it. We want to make sure others are really paying attention. If you think you have a billing error and you truly have a PayPal account, go log in how you normally would. Don't pay attention to this email. Don't click those links. Go log in. Look at your account history. You know, there's going to be message formats that they will notify you through your login, and you can communicate that way.
Jim in Fontana, we go to you now. Hi, Jim.
Hi. I had an automatic withdrawal from my credit card for a life insurance policy for years. I kind of lost track of it. And I came to the end of the policy, and the premium jumped from $120 to $2,300 per month. And I didn't catch the notice that they said they sent. I never saw the notice. But it was 3 months before I caught it because they had drained my credit on the credit card. And I called them up, and the insurance company said, well, you know, we sent out a notice. And I said, well, did you follow it up with a phone call or an email or registered mail? And they said, no, that's not our policy. And Now, this was a couple avenues I might have to appeal, but shouldn't the credit card company have caught that? It was the same merchant, and it went from $1,200 to $2,300 in 30 days. Shouldn't the credit card company be responsible for catching that?
Actually, in this case, because it's an auto withdrawal that you had authorized to the beginning, they wouldn't know that you didn't approve the rate change. And you know, we certainly see that with people who sign up for monthly apps, you know, that pay streaming services or other fitness centers or different things where that monthly user fee could change. They wouldn't question all that if they are authorized withdrawals that are on auto withdrawal.
Yeah, understood. So unfortunately, that's the case, although I can say that the credit card companies do a pretty good job, well, at least in my personal case, in catching other things. Like I get a call from the credit card company saying, and I've told this on the air before, did you want to send a $150 necklace to Colorado? And I said, no. And they said, well, that's we kind of thought that based on, you know, what your normal credit is.
Right. They notice those unauthorized charges that peak up or those things that look like scams and frauds and trends. But this was something that had been ongoing for years with this situation. I would suggest that Jim, if he can't get a resolution with the insurance company, to call the Office of the Commissioner of Insurance.
Yes.
They regulate insurance companies, and depending upon the type of notice and what's required for notifications of premium changes or end of life on that insurance and then rate increases for that extension beyond the original agreement or plan, there may be specific notifications or regulations, and if those weren't followed, may help in getting that a refund back on that. So
yeah.
Office of Commissioner of Insurance. And you can call the Consumer Protection Hotline for that phone number or file a complaint with us, and we'll refer it over. Our phone number is 1-800-422-7128, and the website is datcp.wi.gov.
There you go, Jim. Thank you very much for calling. Cornell in Merrill, Wisconsin, we'll go to you. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hello. Thanks for your show, Larry. Well, last week I got hacked. I opened up my laptop, and there was a big flashing page, and it said, your computer is locked down, you're infected, call Microsoft this number. So I called the number, the people came on, they were very professional. This is my badge number, I'm Sam Houston, and then the other woman. And they said, punch in these numbers. So I punched in the numbers, and then they started insisting, we open up your account. And I said, I think there's some illegal purchases in there. And I said, no, I'm not going to open up my account. So this kept going on, and they kept insisting, open up your account. And he said, no. So I shut it down, and it kind of scared me. So I took my computer down to the tech company. They scrubbed it out. They said, your computer's infected. And then I went to my bank. They said, you got to shut down your bank account. We got to give you a new bank account. I had to go to Social Security, and they said, we have to open up your new account. And it's just a hassle because they had to scrub my computer down for 3 days. So this is quite upsetting, and I don't know who to report this to. And I wish Microsoft would go after these people. They were awful professional. I'll listen to your comment. Thank you for the show.
Yeah, thanks for calling. Well, you did a lot of the right things, at least after the fact.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you responded so quickly to all of that. And you can certainly file a complaint with Consumer Protection. Given the nature of the issue, we won't be able to proceed in trying to identify the individuals, but we'll likely refer it to the IC3, the Internet Crime Team, the cybercrime team to report, so they will have that data. But you just described perfectly a tech support scam. It can come one of two ways. It can come from a phone call indicating you have a problem with your computer and they ask for access to the system because they'll help you solve the problem. Or it can come as a pop-up when you're actually on your computer as well and they ask you to make a phone call or click a link and then everything you said, give access, open accounts so they can purge into your computer. So I'm so glad you shut it down and you got to the tech support people so they could scrub and recognize that so they couldn't gain access and that the banks and Social Security and everyone was so responsive in helping you act quickly. The other thing I would suggest, if it hasn't already been suggested, is to place a credit freeze on your credit report. So if they have your Social Security number, even though you got a new one, they can't go take out extensions of credit in your name on the old one, because right now that's probably in your credit report file, that the old one is associated with you, and I'd lock down your new number as well.
Yeah, and that whole business, I mean, it's kind of a good deal. You get free credit reports and free access that way.
Yeah, absolutely. The credit freeze, putting that on, is free. You can thaw it for free when you need extensions of credit. You coordinate with the banks to see which one they might be looking at to check your credit report. And then actually with your credit report, you know, we've always talked about how you can for free annually get your credit report, and we ask you to check it and do that monitoring with the credit report. But now the government, as part of COVID, had extended your credit report to you could check it for free weekly online, and they've made that permanent now. And so now you can go out and get your credit report for free online every week, annualcreditreport.com. Annualcreditreport.com is the place that you'd want to go. And you can monitor for identity theft. You can monitor for mistakes to make sure that the information is reflected accurately, because what's there does impact your credit score. And you want to just make sure you're dealing with things that aren't accurate right away. And the best way to do that is to look at it every week. Don't just get it and let it sit. You got to look at it. Monitoring means looking.
Isaiah in Sturgeon Bay, it's your turn. Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I was selling a vintage welding machine on Craigslist for about $500. And I had these people who I gave them my address because they were going to pick it up. And they sent me a check in the mail. But the check was for $3,000, and I was supposed to cash the check and give the extra money to the mover who was going to pick up the welding machine. And, you know, I quickly did some research online and found out that this check was likely going to bounce 2 weeks later, and then I would be left with the debt. Anyway, and I've heard a couple other people who have dealt with this type of scam.
Yeah. Worth reminding, that's for sure. Thanks, yeah. Isaiah.
I really love how all the listeners are sharing their stories today, because that's the best prevention to give, you know, legitimacy to all the things we bring up. And Isaiah is talking about a fake check scam through an overpayment scam. It's two in one. And the overpayment is, you're selling something on Marketplace and you get a buyer and they send you more money than you've asked for, ask you to cash the check and give them the difference, or send the difference somewhere else for your trouble, but keep a little bit of it. And really, the check is fake. It's going to bounce. You'll have sent the extra to wherever they say, but that's your money now. And if you've sent the good that they've purchased, you're out that product as well. So marketplaces are, you need to be very cautious with them and make sure your buyer is legitimate, and verify the money in the handoff so you don't lose your funds.
Michelle Reinen, our guest today, administrator of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection within our Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Questions for her, give a call at 800 642-1234, or you could email us, email address ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Taking a look at consumer scams and how to keep safe and scam-free this holiday season, Larry Mueller here with my guest Michelle Reinen, administrator of our Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. Questions, give a call at 800-642-1234, email to ideas@wpr.org. Frank called to say the best way to stop fraud is to shop local, especially with big ticket items. That way you have a real person to talk to and a real store. And that's good advice, I think.
Can't argue with it. I mean, you're going to see who you're dealing with. You know where the store's located. You can ask about the return refund policy, and you can touch and feel the product. So it's hard to argue with that one.
Yeah, Scott McFarlane emailed. He almost got caught in a scam by following links to a site he's purchased from before. The website was a fake, but it looked very similar to the real one, but with much lower prices.
Yeah, that's always something, you know, when you've engaged with a company before and now you're getting all these emails and they look like they're coming from that same company. Are they really? Or is it imposter? And do you click the link to the sale or do you just maybe go to the website yourself to see if the sale's legitimate and being very careful that when you're entering that website, you're not making any typos and you're not just Googling it and then hitting maybe the first search return because those scammers try and buy those first spots. So there's a lot of complexity to shopping online, really.
You can join in, too. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Gift cards are... I give gift cards, as a matter of fact, to some people. What do we need to watch for when buying them?
Yeah, gift cards are a great item, and people love to get them because maybe they are saving up for a really big thing, and if everyone in the family gives them a gift card, they'll be able to buy that big item. But we need to be really cautious with gift cards to be sure that... you are buying from a solid retailer and not a scammer out there. So try and buy gift cards directly from retailers or an authorized seller and never from someone you don't know or some third-party platform. And we also encourage people avoid buying gift cards in bulk and at discounted prices. What we've seen and, you know, seen in complaints and heard from consumers about is that when they buy them in bulk at discounted prices, the cards have either shown up and they've been expired, they're depleted of the funds and don't contain the full value that they have, or the cards never even show up and don't come because you're not buying from that retailer or authorized vendor. You're buying at this discounted place. So those are things to watch for. If you're going to a brick and mortar store to purchase the cards, take a look at it physically. It might be in packaging. Be sure that hasn't been tampered with. And if it doesn't come in any packaging, be sure that the PIN number covering that's on it hasn't been scratched off at all. Mm. What we've seen there is that criminals, really, because the scammer criminals have taken images of the card and they're monitoring and waiting for them to be activated, and they deplete the funds as soon as they are running their bots to against the card numbers and those pins, waiting for them to be activated, and they're deactivating them before the recipient ever gets it or has a chance to do anything. We've seen retailers try and respond to this, so if that happens to you, go back to the retailer, go back to the gift card who it's from. Let's just say you bought a Zappos gift card. Contact Zappos and see if there's any way that they can freeze the card or reverse it if you find anything about that, because maybe the scammer hasn't used it yet when they've drained it of those funds and transferred them. So they are trying to take action, especially when gift cards are being used as part of scams to pay utility bills and things. So they are trying to put some measures in place there.
Dan in Green Bay, we'll give you a shot now. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi there. This is a subject of my mother is elderly. I'm in charge of all her affairs, power of attorney, trustee, everything. So I'm very protective of that Social Security number. I've gone to the extent of having it deleted from the system with the hospitals, the doctors, all the dentists, you name it. I'm just, like I said, totally protective. But she's in a nursing home, and they have that number, which I did not give them, but they got it from a place where she had been rehabbing. And I wanted them to delete it from the system, because what they do is if she goes to the hospital or anything, emergency, they have a face sheet they print up, and it's got her picture on, but it's also got the Social Security number on it, and that floats around. She ended up in the hospital. I walk into a room, and that paper is laying on the counter right by the window with just laying there, and I'm like, oh my God, her Social Security number is right there. Anybody to walk in and do anything with it? Is there anything I can do? They're telling me they need to have that, and I said, you do not. You have her subscriber, her number for her Medicare, everything, and I'm just kind of banging my head on the wall if they actually have the right to have that. But they're being so loose with it. I said, well, if anything, why don't you have the last four digits instead of putting the whole thing on there and it's floating around for anybody to see? You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So the nursing homes are regulated by the Department of Health Services. And so calling them to see what regulations they may have in handling personally identifiable information, that's not medical data, you know, so it's not a HIPAA issue, but they may have regulations in handling other personally identifiable information, and if there's a way that they need to mask the initial digits and only show the last four. So I would suggest contacting them. And then if you've done so many things, so I'm sure this is done, but if not, put that freeze on the credit reports for your mother's account to be sure that should someone gain access to the number, that they can't use it maliciously, and taking out extensions of credit would be one added protection that you could put in place, regardless of what progress you might make with the nursing home.
I flash back to when I was an undergraduate in college, and mid-semester grades or anything would be reported on the poster outside the classroom door, and they use Social Security numbers.
Right there with you, Larry. Mine was posted right there with you.
Oh, my goodness. Dan, thank you. Good luck. Appreciate the call. Pat in Port Washington, what's on your mind?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just had a question and was wondering if your guest thought it was important to have a product like LifeLock, or one of the credit card companies will order extra, give you extra protection for, you know, a certain fee per month. I just didn't know if it was worthwhile or not.
Yeah, this is a great question, and one we get often, and it really is a personal choice because you want to be sure that if you choose to get insurance, identity theft insurance, or if you choose to hire a service to do your monitoring, that you vet them. Be sure you check them out and be sure that they have never been in a situation where they have not honored the representations that they've made about the services that they've provided, and that you understand and know their layers of protection and their privacy policies into how they're securing the data, because you need to hand over all your personal information to that company for them to do the monitoring on you. And most of the monitoring you can do yourself for free, but it takes time and effort. And is that something you can build into your routine to be successful at? You can put the fraud alerts on your credit cards. You can notify your bank. You can examine your statement of benefits from your medical providers and look at your Social Security statement on an annual basis and do your security freeze on your credit report and be sure you're also monitoring your credit report. And you can check your driver's license activity online as well. So there's a whole bunch of things you can do yourself for free, but if you aren't in a place to doing all that, then you might want to look at a service, but you need to check them out.
Pat, thank you. Matt in Milwaukee, hi.
Good afternoon. My question is about when I do an annual credit check on annualcreditreport.com, if I have a freeze with all three credit agencies, do I have to unfreeze those before I use that service?
I don't believe you do, because you're not taking out an extension of credit. You're just asking to monitor, and you are the same person. You may be asked for that additional information with the freeze, but I don't believe that you have to do that, because you are just monitoring what information has been added to your credit report.
All right. There you go, Matt. Thank you very much. And we had some other listeners wondering if you'd repeat slowly the phone number, the 800 phone number, and also the website.
Absolutely. The Consumer Protection Hotline is 1-800-422-7128, and the website is datcp.wi.gov, and that's datcp.wi.gov.
And we'll be repeating that number and that website address as we move along today. And Michelle will be with us right up until 12:30 today. We'll take a quick look at the news, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back with Michelle. You stay with us. Don't touch the dial. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network as we take a look at keeping safe and scam-free this holiday time period with our guest, Michelle Reinen, who is administrator from the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection's Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. So do you need some advice on how to handle a consumer problem, or maybe you have an experience to share? Do you think you may have been scammed? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, email to ideas@wpr.org. And Michelle, this is the time of year, I think we get more and more emails from and phone numbers and phone calls and everything else from charities. Some of them are legit and some of them aren't.
Yeah, it's actually estimated that up to 20% of the year's charitable donations are contributed in the U.S. Happen in December.
Yeah.
So it's, of course, a time of year when scammers are going to try and take advantage of consumers' giving spirit. You might be giving because Giving Tuesday was just behind us, or because you're going to give in someone's name as a gift to a charity, or your end of year contribution could be happening. And so we will see those email blasts asking for you to give. And it's a situation where maybe the charity you give to every year is sending out their reminder, and that one could be legit, but then the next five could all be from scammers and still look like they're from that same charity, because it maybe is a nationally well-known charity and scammers try and fish for your information and money by sending out those fake emails, and they're going to redirect you to their imposter website instead of being able to land directly with the charity. So this time of year and always, we really encourage consumers to go directly to the charity using reliable resource information. Type in the website yourself if you're giving online. use the phone number from last year's receipt for your donation. Don't respond to the letters, the phone calls, and the emails that you get. Just let them serve as your reminder and then take the action yourself. Go drive to the headquarters if they have one in your community and give directly, hand over the check right there and get your receipt before you walk away. And make sure the check is written directly to the charity and not someone who's soliciting on their behalf. This time of year, we also see a number of professional fundraisers who are working on behalf of organizations that fundraise for charities. And so they're not scammers, but the money may not land with the charity in the amount that you want it to. So they are paid. They're professional fundraisers. They take an allotment of that money. So ask questions. You know, how much of this donation is going to end up with the charity for the cause that you're trying to support, as opposed to overhead administrative fees and professional fundraising fees. That's also a way to decipher if this is an organization you want to give to and support, and if you want to give in that fashion. So there's lots of things that someone needs to do to give. You know, your research is part of that. And so you can go to give.org or charitynavigator.org to check out organizations to be sure that they are legitimate, to see how the money's used, and be sure that you want to support those organizations.
In just recent, just in the last year or so, I've actually contributed to a couple of GoFundMe. Have you ever had an issue? I mean, I was careful and I knew I was who I was giving for, but have any problems developed in that area?
We have seen problems develop. We've seen some great campaigns by people that are well known, and they weren't being impersonated. They were out there promoting publicly that they had this GoFundMe. I think, you know, locally, J.J. Watt was one of them in recent years that was trying to help with the flooding, I believe, in Texas when he played there. And you knew the person or the cause that you were doing, and they used GoFundMe for convenience, I'm sure. But we've seen other situations, national news, where an individual has set up GoFundMe, made a big to-do of the issue that they were, and it turned out that, you know, they never had that illness. They never supported that cause. The money went into their pocket, and it was never transmitted to the organizations that could help the natural disaster. And so those are things that are harder to vet, to know that when you're giving there, that you can trust the individual will end up giving the money to the cause that they are saying they're there to support. So doing your research, but maybe having an association with the individual is going to be part of how you have to make that decision.
And usually there's a percentage that is, depending on how much you give, might be 8% or 16% or something. So that's something to keep in mind as well, that if you're going to donate $100, it's going to cost you $108 or $116.
For the platform itself, right? Actually checking that out as well. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
MJ in Altoona, we'll go to you. Thank you for calling.
Hi there.
Hi.
I received a text from Verizon saying a card linked to your account will expire next month. And I checked my my debit card to my checking, and it will expire next month, but I haven't received a new one. And then the text goes on to say, to update your information, please visit, and then it lists a link. And I'm wondering if this is legit.
So a couple of things. You say it's directly from a phone provider, and then there's the link. If the link looks like it matches the actual source of the text message, is that something you can, like you said, Verizon? So can you go to Verizon.com yourself and log into your account and do the update you need to do, rather than clicking this link. And the other thing that I would suggest is that you actually contact and reach out to Verizon and say, I got this text message saying, is this legit? Because the providers certainly know that the scammers use these tools. And so they aren't always going to message in just that manner, because we're telling people not to trust that.
Yeah.
And so banks always say, we're never going to ask you to verify information using a link. They have that practice in place because they know scammers use that tool, and it can be an absolute red flag for you if they do. So I would verify before I click the link.
Barbara emailed to ask if it's illegal for a company to require her social security number for her to open an account with that company. This is a, happens to be a local business cooperative.
It is not illegal for them to ask, because you are opening an account with them where they are extending you credit or service on a rotating basis, and they're going to want to be able to report if you fail to pay or fall behind or are perpetually late, and that would have an impact on your credit report. So they probably need your Social Security number, plus they're going to want to vet you to be sure that you are a reliable interest to loan to, really, in extend services. So it's their way to check out that extension of credit to you.
So if you want the company and they've asked for it, you have to basically either get it, give it, or do business with someone else.
Yeah, you know, you can ask, do you keep this on file? How do you secure it? And ask them some questions to be sure you feel comfortable in their responses as well.
Kelsey in Hartford, we go to you now. Hi, Kelsey.
Hi, I'm calling about scamming that has happened for apartment rentals. My mother is a senior disability, and she's currently looking for new places to live. And there's been a number of instances where she's been shown listings and asked for a fee for application, and it turns out that it's not even the company and not even the facility that owns the housing unit. And I'm wondering, how is that being curbed for other people?
Oh, we would love for you to file a complaint with any details that you have about this. And you can do that at datcp.wi.gov or call the Consumer Protection Hotline at 1-800-422-7128. We do see fake rental listings and postings typically for vacation rentals and when there are housing markets that are difficult to find rentals. They're in high demand. We'll see fake postings where the scammer will just use legitimate property information, post the rental, contact them. They may even show up to meet you to hand off an application and do an exterior viewing, but I can't get you entry because we're fully I haven't given notice and we're full right now, but they'll take your money for that application. But if you do research, the individual you're dealing with isn't the actual legitimate management company that you'd be associated with. They don't align addresses with them or can't answer particular questions. So it can be really hard to decipher, and we really encourage people to not make those payments unless they can verify who they're dealing with, those down payments, if you will.
So do ask for or file a complaint, and the more information you have, probably the better.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it was an ad in a newspaper, it might be something we can track back. If it was a post online, maybe we can. Give us the platform information where you found it, because there may be ways to trace that back, but also we'd want to try and shut it down.
Thanks, Kelsey. David in New Richmond, your turn. Hi, David.
Hey, real quick, the person asking about the Social Security for a co-op in particular, if a co-op is lucky enough, they might have dividends, so they need your Social Security for that. And wouldn't it be great if there was a clearinghouse or legitimate charities, because one of the biggest problems when you donate somewhere is then you are bombarded with mail, email, requesting for more money all the time. So it's great to be able to give money, but the bummer about it is they inevitably bombard you for more. And if there is a clearinghouse where you could just say, I want it to go to the Salvation Army or to Sharing and Caring Hands or wherever you're going to give your money, and then that's it. You don't get any more requests for money.
Yeah, absolutely. Some companies have campaigns that have umbrellas and work that way if you can give through your work organization. One resource I didn't give is the Wisconsin Department of Financial Institutions. You can go to their website and look at donor resources on their webpage. And you can, one option is to reduce unwanted solicitations. Another is you can research the charitable organizations. And you can also verify that a charitable organization or professional fundraiser is registered with the Wisconsin Department of Financial Institutions to do business in our state. So it is another resource to look at, and you can maybe reduce that unwanted solicitations that you're receiving there.
David, that was some good points there, and thank you so much for calling. I had a good point about the co-ops. They do. I was thinking about my own cooperative membership. I do receive a little money once in a while from them, and they need to have your SSI number just for that. Daryl in Menominee Falls, your turn. Hi, Daryl.
Yes, I just wanted to share that there's a scam that I've heard about in Milwaukee. I have some rental properties there, and one person came to look at a place that I recently had open, and she told me that she went to another property, and the guy that met her there said, well, we're waiting for these people to get out, and we're taking applications currently. And if your application checks out, if you give me a down payment for a security deposit, you'll get the apartment. And they're usually looking for people that are in a fix where they really need a place right away. So it's a perfect opportunity to get somebody into a position of, oh, here's a couple $100. And let me know if I'm a good candidate. And they never hear from them again. They do, and they only take cash. It's got to be cash.
Oh, boy.
So, yeah.
So how that would happen, but, you know, it's also a real easy way to make a few $100 real quick.
Yeah. Daryl, thanks.
Yeah, Daryl, that sounds very similar to what Kelsey had described in what she'd experienced. And so a sign that just cash, not getting a receipt, things to be cautious of, you not being able to view the property because they can give notice to view if something's going to turn over, high markets, that things are in great demand, all things to be watchful for, and maybe be sure that these items are being reported to local authorities and consumer protection.
Carter in Kenosha, we'll go to you. Thanks for calling.
I'm calling because I don't think this was a scam, but I don't know what to do. I bought some items from a Boy Scout troop back in, I think it was October, and I thought, oh, they'll deliver it, you know, at Christmas time, but I have not heard from them. And I went to the hardware store, and I said, I know it's not your responsibility, but can you help me? And I know they tried to help me, but I have not heard anything from anyone, and I don't know what to do.
Yeah, I'm assuming you paid for the product up front, given your waiting delivery. If the hardware store knows the PAC number, I think Boy Scouts are PACs and Girl Scouts are troops, try going to the local headquarters, or the regional headquarters for the organization and inquiring with the troop, with that PAC or troop number, and see if they can be a resource in trying to assist in any way, shape, or form. And also, if you can track the payment on your check, if you paid by check versus cash, would be another resource there. Consumer Protection can always try and help mediate with the scouts directly. So you could file a complaint as well, and we could see what we're able to assist with. And you can do that at datcp.wi.gov or call the hotline at 1-800-422-7128.
You might want to check with a local Kenosha. We try and get that PAC number and then check with the local Kenosha Boy Scouts. And that might be a quick way to solve it.
Right. I'm hopeful with that.
Thanks, Carter, for calling. Appreciate it. Mary emailed to ask, how can she stop all the fraudulent emails she's getting about packages? She's been deleting and blocking. Is there anything else you can do? That's what I do.
Yeah, you know, you can report to CAN spam, but that doesn't usually block. That just reports of the scam. Your provider may have a report junk option as well, but that's about the extent of it. Making sure that you just maybe set a rule and put those things directly to the trash can too.
Many of us are going to be traveling, and that reminds me about timeshares. There are probably a lot of people out there who would like to get rid of their timeshares.
Certainly. Yeah. Well, during the holiday season, maybe you're not going to stay with friends and family. You might stay at a nice resort, or maybe the whole family's going there, and you might be offered a gift card to listen to a sales pitch for a timeshare, or maybe you get that free meal or free spa service. And others might be vacationing during this holiday season and also be asked for their time. And we want to be sure that as much as you are enjoying your time there and think that this would be great to do every single year, that when you're listening to that sales pitch, you are considering your own vacation style. And be sure that it would fit this investment, I guess, that you'd be making. Because timeshares can be quite expensive for individuals. The average timeshare costs over $20,000 with annual maintenance fees of about $1,000, which can rise with inflation. And so how do these costs compare to other travel? Will you want to go to the same location or travel at the same time of year? Or do you get points where you can move it around, but will a different location cost you more? Will it be available when you want to go to it, or will that cost more to go when you want to because it's maybe peak season? And whatever representations are made to you, if you choose to proceed with this, be sure that you get everything in writing. If you're out of state, this purchase won't be covered under Wisconsin regulations. If you're here in the state, there are Wisconsin regulations about disclosures and making sure everything's documented and a right to cancel within 3 days after. But you want to be sure, again, that you're making a sound decision in that moment and not just thinking of all the wonderful things you're hearing, that you're doing that full analysis. And then, again, get copies of everything that you are presented with and that you sign before you leave the room.
Because once you're in, it's hard to get out.
Yeah, actually, you brought that up. Once you're in, it's hard to get out. And that's another side of where we see a number of scams, where there are timeshare resale companies that they don't guarantee the work that they do, but they certainly misrepresent. They ask for payment up front, and at the end of the day, you lose money that you've paid to them, and you still have your timeshare because they can't find a buyer or they don't actually follow through. We've had cases of that nature. So be cautious if you're trying to get rid of your timeshare. Go back to the timeshare company and see what options you have for getting out.
We didn't get to AI, which is a concern in many ways, so we'll have to take that up next time, Michelle. Thank you so much for being with us. We'll look forward to your next visit.
That sounds great. Look forward to being here.
Michelle Reinen, our guest. The number to call for complaints, 1-800-422-7128, or go online to datcp.wi.gov. Thanks so much for listening. Tomorrow it's Garden Talk. We'll take a look at the Dane County Farmers Market cookbook and answer your gardening questions as well. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.